wants it. He needs it. My own. My king's blade. Adam.
Yuck. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Brothers Movie Factory, do not take me as some conjurer of cheap tricks. I'm not trying to rob you.
It was just a bit of fun. I was like, where the hell is he going with this intro? Why? Why'd you go there?
It just popped in. We're talking fantasy today. Fantasy genre stuff.
Indeed, we are talking fantasy today, and we have a special guest on the show today. You want to take it from there? They're Gus, the brothers of the Brother Movie Factory.
Indeed. Today we got Matt Provencel here, New York based actor, creator, YouTube personality, and here he is with us today. Hello, Matt.
Hello, and I wanted to add to your Lord of the Rings banter here. I wanted to say the ring is still in your pocket.
Right.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, and of course.
Indeed, you are coming up with a pilot, King's Blade, and we're here today to help, I guess, promote King's Blade and spread
the word. Thank you, guys.
And and share it to what we call our spit listeners, because we're spitting in people's ears, talking and whatnot. also precursor, we are a Pittsburgh-based podcast, so you might hear us use strange words like yins, enat, stillers, gum band, what have you.
Wenda.
Yes, indeed. But just jump right into it. We're talking King's Blade today on the pod. So, Matt, what is King's Blade?
King's Blade is a fantasy story that I wrote and created. And I would say maybe like 80% wrote it, 75% wrote it. But King's Blade is the pilot episode of what I hope is going to be a very long fantasy series. And I really don't care which network or who picks it up. I just have hopes to get it picked up by a network. You guys have probably been used to Stupid Mario Brothers and a lot of stuff on YouTube. This is not that. This is a $30,000 pilot episode of a fantasy series that I hope to be picked up by a network so it can be on a network for a long time.
Right. And that's what really caught my attention, because yes, I'm one of those. I knew you from Stupid Mario Brothers from way back when, and have kind of followed along ever since. So when you announced King's Blade, I was immediately interested. But even then, I knew it wasn't going to be anything to that degree of like Super Mario Brothers, but not a parody or anything like that. This is more in lines of like Game of Thrones or The Witcher, and to be taken in a serious route. So you did say you would like to get it picked up. In general, do you have like any hopes or prospects of where it could go, or is it anywhere that would be interested?
Really anywhere. This actually is funny. This is probably a question. I won't answer it yet because it's the next question on the list. I don't really care where it goes. If it's executed well, if it's shot well, acted well, you know, it looks very expensive, but realistically it's $30,000. Anybody who wants to pick it up, I'm cool with wherever it goes. I just want it to be shown to the world. And if there is a chance, I was saying this to our director a couple of days ago. I was saying that I was like, hey, man, if we have a chance to be paid artists, like well-paid artists on, you know, to do something we love for like 3 or 4 years, let's take the chance and let's do it. Like, let's go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't really care who picks it up. If somebody picks it up and wants to pick it up, that's already so much more than I could have ever dreamed for this. So I'm cool with wherever.
Right. Please.
Yeah.
Fantasy genre would be a difficult beast to just tackle right out the gate. So what kind of things inspired that for you? Because typically someone would probably go for like a drama or a comedy, something a little more feasible, but genre is a little more big budget, I suppose, or could be.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny. So many things inspired me to want to do a fantasy thing. First of all, I think that fantasy, for me, because I'm a nerd with a very big imagination, and also I'm quirky and goofy and theatrical and, you know, just very, you know, energetic. I think fantasy is a bit easier for me to tackle than like a rom-com or like, I don't know, some kind of like raunchy comedy, because I feel like this genre is so full of possibilities that it wouldn't be as hard as you think to make something original or something, you know, from, you know, fresh from your mind. That's, you know, it's okay if it's been inspired by something, but, you know, I think if you write a story with characters that you wrote yourself and a plot that you wrote, and, you know, you made a map with your own places and towns and stuff on it. For some reason, that always came easier to me just because I've loved the genre for as long as I can remember. I remember when, I didn't know what Lord of the Rings was until the film came out in 2001.
Yeah.
And then I saw it. I'm like, what is this? I just instantly fell in love with it. And, for me, that is still the pinnacle of fantasy. Kingsblade was inspired by Game of Thrones. Like, it was probably like 80% where the fantasy inspiration came from was Game of Thrones. But for me, Lord of the Rings is still the pinnacle because that came first. It is still the most detailed, the most well-written, and everyone and their mom has taken from Lord of the Rings because it's just, you know, it's just full of genius, and everybody has taken something from it in one way or another. So
do you want to hear something, Matt, that'll just make you puke? Ben, what's your favorite Game of Thrones episode?
All of them, because I've never watched it.
Ben, what's your favorite Lord of the Rings movie?
The first one, because I've only watched the first two. I'm a bad person, I know. It's funny that you say how you're a nerd. I always tell Gus there's two types of nerds in this world. There's the ones that like the fantasy side of things. There's the ones that like the sci-fi side of things. So I've always been the Star Wars, Star Trek guy over the fantasy worlds of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. I've tried to watch Game of Thrones. I have. Now, Lord of the Rings, that's a different beast because I watched them all. It's been so long ago, and I tried to rewatch them in college during finals week, and that was a mistake because I didn't do well on finals. But I love Fellowship of the Ring. I probably watched Fellowship of the Ring more times than probably any of the newer Star Wars movies. But I watched Fellowship probably at least 6 or 7 times in my life. Two Towers, couple of times, but I've never gotten to Return of the King, and I do not know why. something in my life has stopped me from watching the final and what many consider to be the best Lord of the Rings movie. So I apologize for my ineptitude.
You know what? It's totally fine because so this is actually ties into the Gus, I don't know if you asked the inspiration question of how I got ideas to start this yet, but
that's what we're on.
Oh, rock on. Ben, one of the, it's okay that you haven't seen Return of the King because, you know, you're a human being. I'm not going to hold it against you. I would say see it though, because it's, I think 3 films have won 11 Academy Awards in the history of film. And one of them is a fantasy movie, which was Return of the King. And it's so warranted. It's just, it's hard to describe. When you think of the words fantasy epic, that film comes to mind. The first two are great. Fellowship is my favorite of the three, just because it kind of like sets the tone and it like, you know, draws you easily, sucks you into this world. That's just so awesome. But I would say just to finish the story and see how awesome it is, see Return of the King. But as for not seeing Game of Thrones, I'm not going to give you too much crap for that because I tried to watch Game of Thrones multiple times before I actually did start binging it. And I was like, this is cool, but I'm lost and it's not worth the confusion. Bye. So I just checked out. I remember I tried watching it like 3 or 4 times before I started watching it, but I was still living in New York. I mean, I'm in Chicago now, but I live in New York still. And I work for a big corporate catering company that caters everything from movie premieres to like huge business holiday parties. And in April of 2019, one of our gigs just said HBO on the call sheet. We're like, okay, this will be cool. We got there and our captain was like, all right, guys, welcome. This is the Game of Thrones season 8 premiere party. So these people are A-list actors, have been on the best show in television for the last 9 years. So whatever they want, we go get them. So I was just a busker that night. I was, you know, clearing people's dishes and stuff, trying not to freak out the fact that Sean Bean was like 15 feet from me. It was awesome.
Simply walk up to Sean Bean.
Oh God. I wanted to. They were like, hey guys, we know there's a lot of Game of Thrones fans in here, but if you go up there and ask them for an autograph or a picture, you will be fired. So please don't do that. So we're like, okay, we got it.
I would look at Sean Bean and be like, how are you still alive? You're supposed to be dead and everything, I thought.
It's funny. There are two movies. I can think of two movies where he doesn't die. We'll get to that later though. Anyway, later in the evening, I was walking through just kind of clearing dishes, and I forget how I started talking to him, but Jason Momoa was there, and I was clearing dishes. He's like, oh, thank you, sir. First of all, Jason Momoa is the sweetest guy in the world. I don't know how any of this happened, but it still happened. But he's like, oh, thank you, sir. I'm like, absolutely, man, whatever you need. He's like, what beers do you guys have? I'm like, we have our usual. We have Stella, Heineken, and Coors. He's like, is there any way you guys could get Guinness? I'm like, no, but we don't have any Guinness, but you know, you're a big deal, man. Like our boss has said, if you guys want something, we go get it. So we went out and got him some Guinness. I brought it back to him. He's like, it was awesome. He's like, thanks, man, appreciate it. I'm like, no, you're very welcome. It's my pleasure. He's like, do you watch the show? I'm like, oh dude, I'm ashamed. No, I don't watch the show. I'm a nerd. I'm a fantasy fan and I don't watch the show. He's like, go home and watch the show. Trust me. You'll enjoy it. Just give it. I know it's kind of hard to start because the beginning episode is, you know, hard to follow at first, but just give it a chance. I'm like, okay, Jason Momoa says, go watch it. So I'll go watch it. So I went home and I watched the first 4 episodes and my wife's like, what the hell? I want to watch this too. We got to start over together. I'm like, all right, fine. So we binge watched the entire show and I was like, what the fuck? Why did I take this long to watch this genius, amazing, so well acted, so well shot, incredible show. So Ben, it took me a long time to watch the show, man. So I would say keep trying to watch it, because once you watch a couple episodes in and you're hooked on what's happening, you're not going to want to stop.
Well, what's great is Gus gives me crap for never watching it, but he didn't even watch it until last November, or when the newest season was coming out. He burned through all of them in one sitting, it felt like.
I honestly watched the entire show, like season 1 through 7, in about 2 weeks.
We almost did that too. We have a busy life in New York, but we started watching it at the end of April 2019, and we finished it early June of 2019. So for two busy New Yorkers who have a lot of auditions and jobs and stuff to do, that's a quick way to binge it. So and now I'm reading the books because I wanted to see what was different from the books in the show. And I'm on the second book. So Game of Thrones was a big inspiration for King's Blade, probably one of the biggest. There were a few more things if you'd like to hear about them, but Game of Thrones was easily the biggest one. I was like, I want to write something like this. Let's just do it. So
the long and short of it is what Aquaman wants, he gets.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yes, he got it. He wanted you to watch Game of Thrones. He got it.
Yeah. And it was a bummer because that night I knew 4 people, 5 or 6 people from the cast who I knew from, you know, projects before Game of Thrones. Like I knew who Sean Bean was. I knew who Peter Dinklage was. I knew Jason Momoa was. I knew who Charles Dance was, who played Tywin Lannister. I knew who he was. And I knew who Lena Headey and Alfie Allen were, because Alfie Allen was in John Wick and Lena Headey was in 300, The Purge, and so many other things. So I knew all of them, but I guarantee you I walked past it. I'm pretty sure Emilia Clarke walked up to me and asked me what the drink was that I was holding in my hand, but I didn't know who she was because I didn't watch the show. I can guarantee I talked to half the cast that night. I'm like, I don't know who you are, but now I do, and I feel stupid because I wish I was talking to you and I knew who you were sooner. I'm almost 85-90% sure that Emilia Clarke talked to me that night, but I didn't know who she was.
That's a great story in of itself. Yeah. So you could have talked to your boy Jon Snow or something. He didn't even know it.
I did know that much. I do know that there were a couple people who skipped the after party from here, and Kit Harington, who played Jon Snow, was one of them. He skipped it. Lena Headey did skip it as well. And Peter Dinklage was there for about 25 minutes, and then he bolted. So
that's really cool, though. I've heard you mention on your live streams, and for those of you listening, you should look up his weekly live streams. If you follow Matt on Twitter, look him up on YouTube. He does a weekly live stream with updates of Kingsblade as well as additional information. But I've heard you mention also part of the inspiration was actually like Chronicles of Narnia and Prince Caspian by chance.
That was a recent inspiration. First of all, if anybody listening watches my live streams, if you want to go back, if you go back and rewatch any of the ones you haven't seen before, heads up, they are an hour long. I'm sorry they're very long, but I feel like I can't really get the point across of all that's happened during the week in like 25 minutes. So if they're about an hour long, so bear with if anybody watching, listening goes to watch them, they're an hour long. Sorry. But Prince Caspian was actually a recent inspiration. So I'm guessing you guys have seen the new map, the new Kingsblade map that I...
Yes.
That a buddy of mine and I were working on. We came out with it. The original map we had for Kingsblade was really cool. It was fun. But it was a little 3D and it looked a little cartoony. I'm like, this looks cool. But the more I look at it, I don't know if I like the look of it. I don't think it fits for this story and for this, you know, this project. So... I went online, I looked up the map of Middle Earth. I'm like, this is cool, but that's a very specific look. I don't want to like blatantly take that look. So then I looked up the Narnia map and I'm like, this is what I'm going for. This looks like something you would see in a book in this world, but doesn't look too 3D or too hokey. And doesn't look like it blatantly took from Middle Earth. It looks like its own thing. And that's what I wanted to go for. And also I hadn't seen Prince Caspian since 2009 when it came out. And I recall hating it when I saw it. I'm like, this is stupid. Why are the Narnians fighting these Telmarines? They're called the Telmarines. I'm like, why are they fighting these Telmarines? I mean, I don't like how they look like, you know,
like Spanish,
yeah, Spanish soldiers from like the 1500s. And then I rewatched it again with my wife recently. I'm like, this is awesome. How did I hate this? The acting is good. The Telmarines are actually really, really cool. I love that only Lucy can see Aslan. I love that Peter gets kind of cocky. I love the fact that Peter Dinklage is in this and I forgot. I recently watched Prince Caspian and I'm like, this is amazing. Why did I hate this? Cause it's really cool. And it just, that particular day I watched it, I'm like, I want to get to work on writing some more ideas of season 2 and 3 of Kingsblade. So, yeah, Prince Caspian was a recent like revamp of inspiration. So
maybe yeah. You were thinking of Voyage of the Dawn Treader as the one you hated.
I actually haven't seen that one because I recalled seeing Prince Caspian when I was 19. I was like, this sucks. Narnia is ruined. And I read the books too. So I know that Prince Caspian was not the best book. The best books were Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Magician's Nephew, and The Silver Chair. Those are the three best books, in my opinion. But
Voyage of Dawn Treader, I mean, teach their own, but it's poop.
Bummer.
Yeah. So we kind of covered like a lot of inspirations for the show, but no spoilers. What is the pilot about?
There are no spoilers. I can easily tell what the pilot is about without giving anything away. I do have one more inspiration thing that I do want to mention because this helps me not only as an artist, but like as an actor, but just as a person in general. If anybody listening is an actor or an artist who is kind of struggling or feels like giving up, I felt that way so many times in my career, but I will say one of the things that really pulled me out of it and put me in a good direction was if anybody watches The Office, Gus, Ben, do you guys watch The Office?
I do not.
I have watched the first 2 seasons.
It's okay. Excuse me. It's not so much an Office reference, but Jenna Fischer is an actress on The Office and she plays Pam Beasley. She wrote this book. I actually have it about 5 feet from me on the shelf over there. It's called An Actor's Life, A Survival Guide. And it's her book and her life about how she moved from St. Louis to Los Angeles and was struggling and didn't know what she was doing and living in an apartment with three roommates and had to eat really disgusting things because she couldn't afford, like, you know, to buy actual groceries and stuff. It was just about her life before she booked the office and when she booked the office. And it's just really, really inspirational to see what, like, she went through some horrible shit. Some stuff that really would make you want to quit as an actor. So, it was just really inspirational to read that. So that book pulled me up. So if anybody wants to order it online or check it out, it's called An Actor's Life, A Survival Guide, by Jenna Fisher. And that really also played a big part in Kingsblade, because one of the chapters in that book says when you're not working as an actor and you have no creative, you have such a creative void to fill, you need to write your own stuff. And I was like, that's a good idea. And then now I have Kingsblade, because that's a good chunk of why I have the pilot I have, is because I read that chapter in her book saying, fill your creative void by writing something and just follow through with it. Work on it a little bit every single day and see what happens. And I did. So hooray.
That's truly how this got started, was you were kind of, I don't want to say in a rut, but you were looking for something, to act and to work on. And
you could say I was in a rut. I was, not in like a crazy, I've been in worse places in my career before, but, yeah, this came to me at a good time, 'cause I was in a not a happy place career wise. I was legit thinking, okay, I'm almost 30. Maybe I should just go get a good job at ESPN or something like that and just call it quits for acting. So in a way, more so than Game of Thrones, I would credit her book to helping me, you know, pull me out of a rut, and it really helped a lot. So
excellent. That being said, yes, you created this story. What is the synopsis of Kingsblade?
So I can do a shorter version and a longer version. The shortest version is, the story revolves around two characters. There is an exiled knight, and his pal, who is a ranger. He's not like your typical ranger. He's not like, you know, he wears a hood and goes around and like steals. He's part of this group of rangers who are kind of like, they're kind of like, I almost said a Game of Thrones reference, but you might not get the reference. So there you go. Actually, that's a bad reference, because they're nicer than those guys. I was going to say they're like the Brotherhood without banners, but they're really not. They're the rangers that this guy is a part of are kind of like, I would say, vigilantes. Like, you know, yeah, they're looking out for themselves, but they're also, you know, not greedy people who would, like, you know, kill you and rob you. So about an exiled knight and a ranger. Both men are from a kingdom in the West that has been destroyed and taken over by this self-proclaimed king. And this self-proclaimed king does not believe in a feudal system, which this world is run by. This world is run in a feudal system where every kingdom has their own ruler and their own set of laws and governments and stuff. And this guy's like, nope, fuck that. This world should be ruled by one ruler with one set of laws, and that's it. Nobody should govern themselves. It should be under one rule. So this self-proclaimed king began his conquest by destroying the homeland in the West of these two main characters. So their families, their houses, friends, everyone is gone. So these two men fled and escaped somehow. And they both went their separate ways. And the story begins with them meeting up in this massive forest a couple of years after their families and homes were destroyed. And these two men intercept a sword. This royal sword was stolen by a band of mercenaries, and they stole it from this Eastern king. And this king in the East has always been an ally of their homeland in the West. They've always been allies and friends. So this act of war has happened, and these two men intercept this stolen sword, and they plan to return it to this Eastern king with helps that they'll help them with it, with their hopes that they will, they hope that he will help them reclaim their homeland in the West. And that is the pilot episode. I have a lot of ideas going through my head that I have to write down with my, my buddy who helped me co-write this script. But that's the pilot episode. And I'm not sure if that's going to be the plot of season one, where it's them trying to get their homeland back, or if that's the plot of the entire series. I'm still figuring that out. But that is the pilot, essentially. You got two men intercept a royal sword from one of their allies, and they return it to him with hopes that they'll help them reclaim their home.
And, you know, that's something I've really appreciated about your process with King's Blade is the world building. Because you could just simply stick with these characters and that's really it. But you've announced on your live streams and your Instagrams and other social media that you have all these sigils and these different groups of people that might not even make it into, you know, the pilot. But this whole map you've created and this world that you're looking to build upon, I like that you're making the foundation. So now you can create stories within this world. It was kind of like you mentioned recently with Tolkien, creating a language first, the Elven language, and then making the story.
Mm-hmm.
So creating the foundation first and then the story after is very cool. I appreciate that as a storyteller myself.
Thank you. Also, there's just, it's the same thing with Tolkien and Game of Thrones. There's a lot of stuff you don't see happen, but it contributes to what you're watching.
Indeed.
Like in the beginning of Game of Thrones, I was like, who the hell is Jon Arryn? Why is he so important? And then I learned all this backstory of how Jon Arryn left the Vale in Game of Thrones to go serve as Hand of the King to the Mad King Targaryen. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense now. I get it. But like, it's the same thing with King's Blade. Like, there's a lot of backstory you're not going to see unless I like write it into a book. But it does, you know, contribute to what's happening with what people are watching.
Oh, absolutely. That's just good world building.
Yeah. And I will blatantly say that the royal houses, like the house names and the house words and the house sigils, I think that was always around. It was always around like in medieval times and like in like, Ben, you're a sci-fi nerd. I actually first learned of like the royal houses, like, oh, like house whatever or house this, from Dune. Because Frank Herbert's Dune had like House Atreides, House Harkonnen, House Carino, had all these royal, political, powerful family houses. So I'm like, I like that concept. And Game of Thrones kind of just like, you know, blew that up. And I'm like, you know, I did kind of take that from Game of Thrones, but I'm also realizing that that was around in other stories long before that. So I don't feel as bad about taking like the house names and house sigils. So
yeah, that's a legitimate thing. That's because that's been around. I mean, even a lot of people of English and Irish descent, a lot of times their names, I mean, that at one point was a house in those kingdoms. And so I have a history background. So that's, you know, that's definitely something that's been used in the past in our world, let alone a fantasy world.
Yeah. So you can vouch for that then.
Yeah.
Great.
Ben, you want to talk about, we won't say our last name, but you can talk about that.
I mean, yeah, like we stem from an English born family. Even our name, the house of our name is tied to an assassination attempt on the Queen of England at one point.
Way back when.
So, yeah. It's like, there's things like that. I mean, it's even fantasy has its things, but it can be stemmed in reality too, for sure. So yeah,
we have a house sigil as well.
Yes, indeed.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's, no, you didn't steal anything. Good.
Awesome. Good to know. Yeah.
So with your story along the way, you have you're starring in this, correct? You're playing the
knight. Yes, I am. I'm playing the Exiled Knight.
Yes. Is there any cast and crew you'd like to shout out or mention? Or I guess if you wouldn't mind giving some examples of maybe the process of finding them or hiring them or reaching out to them.
Well, originally this was I wanted it to be done with Richie and Chris from Stupid Mario Brothers because they're my two best friends. And I wanted it to be like, I want to be like, hey guys, if we're going to do this, this is not going to be some stupid hokey Rich Alvarez thing. I wanted to put money in this. I wanted to go to film festivals. I wanted to, you know, get some attention and be probably our biggest, most professional project. So originally, Rich was in it. Chris had a small cameo role and a bunch of people that I knew from back home outside of the Rich Alvarez gang who are just fellow actors back in California were going to be in it. But when Richie and Chris dropped out, literally everything changed. It was just me and my wife who were cast in this. My wife is playing the queen.
Yes.
She is not playing opposite me because her character is married to the king, and I'm not a king. I'm just the last of my house trying to get by. So it was just us. She was the first person I cast because she is an actor as well, and she was also going through that, you know, like, will I ever work again feeling. So I was like, well, I'm putting you in this so you can, you know, go along this ride with me. When Rich and Chris dropped out, I had to start from scratch. So I didn't start looking for cast or crew or anything until I had a better script, because the script was okay when Rich and Chris wrote it. But then my buddy, whose name is also Matt, he went to NYU for film. I gave him the script, the most recent version of the script, and he just injected it with so much meat and so much creativity. And it's the biggest selling point I have of this project so far. So once I had a better script, I was able to pitch it to more people. And there's a buddy I work with at the catering company who just looks very king-like. He's tall. He's got like this bushy brown beard. He's a good looking dude. He's very fit. I'm like, hey, Wes, let's talk. I pitched him the idea, and he's like, that sounds cool, I'm in. And then he read the script Richie and Chris had. He's like, yeah, that's cool, I'm in, let's do it. And then he read the script that my buddy Matt wrote. He's like, holy fuck. Let's just start filming now. What happened to the script? I'm like, I did some rewrites. He's like, you've done good, let's go. And then once I had him, and I had a couple other people from New York who I wanted to be a part of it, Wes, who was playing the king, he's playing King Brennus III, he recommended a bunch of people to me. I started with the director. He recommended a couple directors to me, and I talked to a couple of them, and then I met Rob. Rob is our director now. He and I instantly hit it off, and I could tell by the way he works and his credentials. I'm like, I have to have this guy be a part of this. And to be fair, Rob is the one who helped me realize that there's a bigger ceiling I had in mind for this project. He said, what do you want this project to be? I'm like, I want it to be I want it to not be a short film anymore. I want it to be a pilot episode. He's like, then do that. Make it be the pilot episode. And I've read the script. The script is great. The writing is great. It flows well. The tone is good. The characters are good. But it's a fantasy film. It's a fantasy project. You're going to need more money. I'm like, okay, well, how much do you think we need? He's like, it's going to be around $30,000. I'm like, oh, shit. Well, that sounds like a lot, but if it's worth it, because if it looks, you know, expensive and it looks like it's more than $30,000 put into it, it's worth the time. So I got a lot of people involved in this that I have done. Like my buddy Garrett, who was on last week, I did a musical with him in Chicago, and he and I are close pals, and he's come to see my shows in Chicago. I came to see his shows. We're really close. Rob and Wes are the two guys who recommended people to me who are like, hey, reach out to this person, and you know, they're awesome. I work with them on this, and we did this together. And I reached out to them. I'm like, hey, I'm reaching out on behalf of Wes. And they're like, oh, Wes is awesome. Anyway, what's up? I'm like, I have this script. Would you want to read it? Read for this part. And they're like, yeah, sure. They got back to me. They're like, okay, I'm in. Let's do it. I'm like, just like that? They're like, yes, this is my forte. This is the genre I love, and the script is good. So I'm like, okay. And there are still quite a few parts uncast in this particular project, but I feel like I'm doing a good job of assembling the right people. Because I didn't just like willy-nilly jump to, I'm like, okay, I want you now. Like, don't read the script. It's just you're in. I asked questions like, hey, is this something you want to do? What's your work ethic like? Are you free for this? Are you committed to this? Do you believe this thing can be, you know, a successful project? And they're like, yes. So I took the right process of asking people to be a part of this. And there's still a lot of holes left to fill. There's still, I think, 12 roles uncast, from supporting parts and one principal part to small one-liners. But that's not the biggest issue right now, so I'm not rushing that. But when the time comes, I'm excited to have the rest of the vacant slots filled. So, right. Hope I answered your question.
Yeah, so based on like that with like remaining actors and things, where are you looking to film this project, and would you be looking for actors in that location or all over the country or what have you?
I'm not really sure because about finding different actors, I'm not sure because a couple people who are in this are people I knew from Chicago. Mm-hmm. And most of them are from New York because I'm based out of New York. But I could ask anywhere. There could be somebody in Pittsburgh who's perfect for something. And I'm like, okay, right. Come to New York and let's do this. I'm going to ask around. I'm going to ask people, you know, who are in the cast, if they know anybody else who'd be good. I will ask back in California because that's where I'm from. And it's also a big actor state. But recently when it comes to deciding where to film this, I wanted to do it in, back when Rich and Chris were involved, we were going to shoot it a good chunk of it on Chris's property, which I didn't like already because that's the stupid Mario Brothers property. And that was just recycling old ideas. And I hated that idea. I'm like, no, we don't not going to half-ass this. So whenever
use what you have though, in certain situations, but
you do, but I was still, the area we went to high school in, it was like nothing but trees and woods. We could have just taken the camera, you know, mm-hmm. into the woods where it was something new. But when they dropped out, I wanted to go upstate New York and shoot it. A couple hours north of New York, there's this big castle that's on the Hudson River. And there's a place called Dobbs Ferry where it's just like nothing but wilderness and trees. And that's where 80% of the film, not film, damn it, pilot, 80% of the pilot takes place. But I talked to a producer that I'm still want to be a part of this, and she was recommended to me by Wes, who plays the gang, who's recommended almost everyone who's involved in this project. She said there might be a way down the line if, you know, we get the full budget, there might be a way to go shoot this in the UK. I'm not sure, but I think that would be awesome. But also recently I had a meeting with Rob and one of his buddies who I want to be in the cast. And his buddy, his name is Freddie. He says that he has a pal up in Alaska who is a huge fantasy nerd who has access to a Red camera. I'm not sure if you know cameras or anything, but Red is like best possible camera you could use. So now I'm really kind of, I would love to lean toward shooting it in Alaska because Alaska is very foresty and got a lot of, you know, beauty to it. And like I said, 85% of this project, the pilot episode, will take place in the woods. So I'm definitely leaning towards, if we can make the UK work, that would be awesome, but I'm kind of closing that door a bit because that would be expensive as all hell. But I would lean toward, if I had my way, I would love to go take a look at Alaska and shoot it up there.
That'd be a really unique setting. You don't hear about a lot of things being shot in Alaska fantasy wise. So that would be, I think, really cool because Alaska goes 0 to 100 in a lot of different aspects of its environment.
Yeah, that's another reason why I thought Alaska would work. Not so much because of the cold. Like this, the story can take place. It can take place in the fall. It can take place in the spring. It doesn't matter what season the story takes place in, but it'd be preferable if there was a lot of overcast in it because that's just, I feel like that kind of sets the tone a little bit. Because if it was too sunny all the time, it would be, you know, I don't think that would fit with the story as well. But I feel like, yeah, Alaska can definitely go 0 to 100 in so many places. But when the time comes, I would love to take our director and a couple of the actors up there and, you know, look around. And not to like jump to conclusions, but if we are able to use the Red camera of one of Freddy's pals, that would be awesome too. Not gonna lie.
Absolutely.
I'd also save a lot of money on the renting for a Red camera.
Oh yeah, isn't it like $10,000 a week or something to rent a Red camera?
I don't know. It's a lot though. That's why I'm hoping that that's a resource that might be available to us down the line. And I'm not going to put all my eggs in that basket. But if we are able to talk him into using it for a little bit to save some money, that would be great. So
yeah, my college background was in filmmaking and media, and a couple projects we got to shoot with a Red camera, and they are pretty nice. Just to touch on cast and crew, you mentioned your friends from back in California, Richie and Chris of the Rich Alvarez channel and Stupid Mario Brothers. I know initially that was probably what brought some eyes, you know, to the project, fans of the show and whatnot. And it makes sense, just based on your history together, that when you had this idea, you know, go to them. We're all struggling creators here. And so I'm basically what I'm getting at is I'm glad that even though, you know, life gets in the way sometimes and they weren't able to continue on, personal reasons, which is, you know, just fine. I'm glad for you that you've been able to carry on the project and it's, you know, been able to improve, but, you know, thanks to them for that initial step and, you know, being able to get on your feet with it and, you know, get to where you're at now, which I think is a better place overall. So that's good on you and good on the project.
Of course. And they will get credit. They'll be credited in the credits of this pilot because I wouldn't have the polished, amazing version, version 9 of the script without them writing the first 6. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't be there without them. I'm still, if I am being honest, I'm still a little bit frustrated that our previous GoFundMe had like almost $4,000 in it and they refunded it. I'm like, you guys couldn't look into transferring it, a little more thoroughly. Cause I'd be at like $11,000 right now total on my own project if that was the case.
That too. I was a little confused why that happened. Cause I'm sure a handful, if not most, who knows, re-donated upon receiving, you know, a refund.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I was a little curious as why it didn't just kind of transfer or just, yeah, I don't know. But what have you, Ben and I, we're, we have our own lives and whatnot, but we're struggling creators as well. Back in the day, and even still today, we create short films and whatnot. But yeah, sometimes life gets in the way, and you can't commit to the project, whether it's work or this or that. And so when they dropped out, I totally understood, and I hope a lot of fans and other people who looked on the project didn't mind as well.
Yeah, there was one person who I don't remember their name or their user. It's not what I'm getting at, but one person like, now that they're gone, I don't know why I should support this because they're not involved. I'm like, well, it's my idea and I'm involved. If you've ever liked Rich Alvarez or been a fan of me as Wario or just me in general from all the Rich Alvarez stuff, why does that make a difference? I was a part of the channel.
Yeah.
And the idea of Super Mario Brothers was not Rich's idea. Like, Chris and I came to him with the idea of doing the show. And I remember we were at lunch in high school one day. We were talking about making like an episodic Nintendo series. And we originally had an idea to go shoot, you know, episode 10 had the go-karts. Yeah. We had in mind to go to a golf course and try and rent golf carts to shoot this. That was one of our first ideas we had. So I was like, hey, if Richie and Chris aren't involved, why are you not supporting it? Why would you not support me? Because I was involved in Rich Alvarez's channel just as much as they were.
Right.
And literally in a second, that person was like, okay, that's actually a really, really good point. I got your back. I'm like, uh-huh. Thank you.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. But I mean, as you sit now, you're way ahead of where you were. Yes, you might have had a bit more money towards the project, but I think since where you were, since they've unfortunately had a drop out, you're like I said, you're in a better place with the project overall.
And Chris has been crazy supportive too. Chris has been on the streams a lot, and Chris is saying, "Hey, I'm really proud of you. You're still going." So that means a lot.
No ill will towards.
No, not at all. No, and I will say the reason they dropped out is because we were on opposite coasts, and that's hard to communicate and hard to, and they had, you know, they have their own jobs and they have their own commitments and relationships. So if anybody out there is still thinking it's, oh, creative differences, that's not true. They dropped out because they just didn't have the time. They both had full-time jobs. They both have relationships. They both have other things going on. And we were on opposite coast with 3,000 miles separating us. Unless we were made of money and can travel back and forth at the drop of a hat, it wasn't going to work out because, you know, they weren't like down the street. They were across the country. So we dropped out. They dropped out because they didn't have any time to work on it. They had other stuff going on, and that's totally fine.
Yeah. But now, you know, you got your script, you got your cast and crew coming together. Everything has feet. What are, like, let's say very soon here, you're able to start shooting. You've achieved your budget. And you're able to finish this and present it to festivals and whatnot. What are you looking forward to the audience seeing in your completed project?
I'm looking forward to seeing where it can go, really, because our director, Rob, has constantly praised how good the script is. And this guy wrote his own pilot and put his own, he had $30,000 of his own life savings he put into it. And it literally left him broke, like he had $0 and 0 cents when he was done making it. But it made his career. That opened so many doors for him, and now he is able to support himself as a filmmaker. And his pilot, Adulthood, is what it's called, has just been greenlit for the first season. So if someone like him is saying this project has potential to go a long way, I am geeking out in my own head of thinking, like, wow, this could be something special. So I'm excited to show the audience the progress, really, because people have been watching this stream and they've been along for the ride so far of, like, hey, this is my first live stream, to, hey, guys, today is our first day of shooting. Stay tuned and we'll show you some stuff that we're doing. I'm excited to show them all the behind-the-scenes stuff that we're going to do. That's actually one of the perks of the donations. If you donate a certain amount, you're going to get like a compilation of behind the scenes pictures and videos. I'm also really excited to just get out there and shoot it. And once it's done, I'm excited to start setting up some meetings with, you know, people who might be able to get us a meeting at like Netflix or Hulu or something like that. I'm really excited to submit it once it's done to see where the ceiling ends. So,
yeah. I can imagine that's exciting for you going through this process now. I can speak just from personal experience. I was always, when I'd start a film or a project, I'd always want to it to be finished and show it to people. And the fact that I was so excited for that end goal made the difficult parts of the struggles of making the film itself kind of worth it. Because in the end, that's really what it's for, is at least this medium is to share it and show people. You don't make a movie and then just keep it to yourself, really, typically. The goal is to share your art. So, yeah, I'm excited for you in that regard.
It's funny. One of Rob's friends, who I had a Zoom meeting with a couple of days ago, literally just about 10 seconds ago, emailed me back. Because he's like, I'm interested in these two characters. I'm like, those two characters are cast, but here's what's not cast. And he's like, oh, well, I also like these two. And I didn't read the whole email, just saw that he wrote me back. And I'm like, oh, well, we're going to talk later today. So,
yeah, right on. So we've talked about your inspirations for Kingsblade. But how is Kingsblade different from other media in the fantasy genre?
I was just talking to somebody else about this. There's a couple things that make it different. First of all, it's at least the pilot episode is. I think this is what's going to make a really, really good pilot out of this. It will develop over time too, but what's happening is it's a smaller, much more isolated story that we are following in the midst of a bigger story happening around these characters. So all these characters are like, it's more intimate and it's isolated and it's, you know, following this specific path of people rather than jumping around a lot. I'm sure down the line, if we get to, you know, expand, it will become more of like a jumping around because there'll be more characters and more conflicts and stuff to show. But what makes this pilot interesting is that it's a smaller part of a larger story that we're following. We're following just this very specific group of characters who are initially all part of this massive war that's happening around them in this massive time of conquest. But I like the fact that we're following just these specific people and they're still tied into the story, but it's about like what's happening with them and how their actions play a part in everything happening around them. Mm-hmm. Also, I discovered this with a meeting I had a couple of days ago with one of the cast members and a friend of his family. This story I plan to be very, very, very grounded and real. They asked me about one of the references we were meeting with. They asked me about green screens and like CGI and stuff. I'm like, that never once crossed my mind. My mind was always on having everything be real and grounded. Like if, you know, if there's supposed to be a shot of a castle in one of these scenes, I want to go make a down payment on a castle somewhere, shoot in a real castle. I don't want to CGI it. I don't want to use a stock footage clip. I want like a real castle to be shot exteriorly and shot interiorly. And while dragons and magic and stuff do exist in this world that I've created, I feel like it takes away some of the groundedness, if the grounded feeling of the story, if you show stuff like that. So it's very grounded. It's very real, and it's a much more intimate story, I think, is what's going to make Kingsblade special and stand out from other fantasy stories.
Yeah, because I know like the go-to would be like, you know, what, how's this different than Game of Thrones or whatever? And I'm sure several people have made that comparison your way.
Yeah, there was some other person's another fan of Kingsblade / Rich Alvarez channel who did their own podcast, and he's a nice guy, and he was showing this to try and show his friends for support, and his friends just like totally tore it apart, and it really pissed me off. And that's also something you just don't do. Like if you're someone's writing something creative, like working on something they're passionate about, you don't shit all over it. You may think to yourself, oh, that looks like Westeros, but keep it to yourself. Like, don't, it's not necessary. It's not necessary. So, but yes, I've had it like, oh, that's just Westeros right there. How's it different from Game of Thrones? I'm like, well, if you sit down and listen, I can tell you.
Yeah. I like that you're sticking to kind of like the smaller scale for at least the pilot and focus more on these characters and their relationships. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, and there are things that will happen. Like, say, if we get to do, you know, a couple seasons of this, there are characters and pieces and places that are going to have to make an appearance because they extend the story, and they're too important to like not never see. But the pilot itself is going to be intimate and grounded, and you know that's what I'm looking forward to. And that's what makes this current script so great.
Awesome. And like I said at the top of the show, Kingsblade is the main focus of this podcast, but having Matt Provencal on here, got to talk about Stupid Mario Brothers just for a quick bit, because, you know, to a decent chunk of the population out there, Matt, you are YouTube famous for this show that technically ended in what, 2012?
Yeah.
8 years ago, but still love today. I mean, fuck, I've been rewatching the show from the beginning. Even before I asked you to be on the show, I think I was in the middle of season 3, which it might be my favorite season of that show. And there's something this is what's so attractive of Super Mario Brothers is, yes, it's silly, it's dumb, and it's a bunch of friends just getting a camera and making some films and whatnot, but there's something so charming, and there's so much heart to it. And then, like, I don't know, it's, there's something that keeps bringing me back. And currently I'm in the middle of season 4. But you are a big part of that show. You play the role of Wario. And reason season 3 is maybe my favorite is because as a character, you get a chance to shine as like the main villain of that season, which is pretty cool.
That was fun. Yeah.
I actually introduced Ben to the show with what episode is it? You might remember. It's 44, 45. It's the big lightsaber duel between.
That's 44.
44. You beam sword. My mistake.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, you against Waluigi, Mario and Luigi. Good stuff. I just wanted to touch on that a bit because,
yeah, sure.
Like I said, to a big population, you're YouTube famous. Like, here you are now. Is that
Is that something you're happy to be represented as, and like a badge you'd like to wear, or is it like a moniker you'd like to maybe stray away from, the idea of YouTube famous or Super Mario Brothers or playing Warrior or anything like that?
I would say in a way both. There are times where I kind of wanted to like not be brought up because I'm worried that like if I'm not so much worried like they won't take me seriously, but just because when it was shot early on, it wasn't the best quality. Mm-hmm. Part of me just wouldn't want like casting directors to see that and think that I'm like unprofessional or like it's just like herpy derpy half assing things. But to be fair, none of my career has ever hindered on like, oh, you were in this web series? Huh. Can you come to a callback? It was never like that. It was never like, oh, you did this Nintendo series. Next, like nothing like that ever happened in my life. So it hasn't really affected my career very much. I just, part of me is like worried, like if a casting director sees that, they're like, oh, we can't take this guy seriously. Are you serious? Really? No. So that worries me a bit, but mostly I'm kind of proud of it because it was a lot of fun, and we still to this day didn't know it would take off to what it did. We didn't know it would take off, you know, from get us from 45 subscribers to 100,000 plus. So yeah. I would say I'm more so proud of it than ashamed of it.
Yeah, some episodes getting well over a million views. On average, it was like 300,000 to 700,000 per episode, somewhere in between there. And it went on for 75 episodes with movies and spinoffs. And there's definitely a fan base of it out there. I'm just going to assume you have this kind of feeling. But like, there's something special about like looking back on times with friends and filming these videos and being able to look back on them, hopefully with fond memories. So yeah, I see that when I watch Stupid Mario Brothers, even to this day. And, I just continue to appreciate it. I know, like for me in my current vernacular, and here I am 30 years old, but I quote the show in my regular life to people who obviously just don't know what I'm talking about, but it's not too often that I wouldn't just randomly be like, where am I? Or, like we roll with gangs, shit like that. I laughed out loud the other day. I was watching an episode. I think you played Donkey Kong and you're riding on Yoshi's back and you do something like, Butch Cassidy.
It is Butch Cassidy. I don't know why I said that. I thought it'd be funny. And it's funny, I did it on that recording for it and nobody laughed except for me.
That was fucking funny.
Usually I do something random like that and Richie and Chris lose it, but I did that and they were like, okay, that was good. I'm like, that's it.
Yeah. I've been rewatching the show, right? And up to that point, like that was the funniest thing in the whole show.
I've actually rewatched it so many times since, all the way through since the show ended. Actually, since I've been in the greater Chicago area, my mother-in-law's place, I haven't rewatched the whole thing because I'm kind of like, I would watch like seasons 1 through 4 and then I would stop and go back, and then I'd watch the whole thing and then I'd stop and go back. Since I've been here, I've actually rewatched the series twice all the way through. Because yes, it does remind me of much simpler times. It reminds me of, you know, when before adulthood really set in and free, like before you had to like get a job, pay rent, go to school, all these adult things that are kind of, you know, they're cool, but they're also big bummers. It was just easy to go over to Chris's house, shoot all this stuff, and just go back home to your parents' place where you didn't have to pay any rent. So it definitely did remind me of simpler times. And also, it's not just me on this, but, this show helped me through some bad times. I wasn't like, you know, on the verge of, you know, anything really drastic or tragic, like a couple other people were, but, there are times where, you know, when I was still living at home in California, there were like, you know, girl issues, or if there was like, you know, I didn't get cast in something, or if there was something that was making me sad or depressed, going to shoot this stuff at Chris's house always pulled me out of it. At least, even if not permanently, if, you know, at least for a couple hours. And I later learned that this show apparently saved a lot of people's lives. I've had people reach out to me telling me that, I was thinking about, you know, committing suicide, or I was thinking about, you know, running away, or like doing something horrible. And then I found your show and it really lifted my spirits. And I'm like, holy shit, that's, I didn't know our stupid, goofy, hokey show meant that much to people. And it really pulled a lot of people out of some dark places. So that's really touching to hear. So it really means a lot that we made an impact on people like that. So.
Oh, absolutely. 2012, I was in a similar spot. Things weren't going my way. Girl troubles. And I was just found myself in a rut and just in a dark spot. And that's around when season 5 came out. And I started rewatching the show from there. And it, like you said, it can lift people's spirits. And there's something so charming and innocent about it, but fun too. And just from my perspective, making films like that when I was a teenager and in college, just my own short films, it just harkens those nostalgic feelings back to me when I watch something like Super Mario Brothers. Cause I'm like, this is what I did too. And it was cool to see other people doing the same thing. Ben, do you ever have any feelings or memories like that with any of our shorts that we've done in the past?
Yeah, I mean, all the shorts that I did with you, anytime you needed me for films for school and whatnot, but also just, I was just watching videos that my friends and I made just randomly. None of them were anything film genius, you know, but it was fun. There's something about you're making memories with friends, but it's being permanently captured on film. It never goes away. You get to experience it whenever you want. And I just had stumbled upon them. I didn't even know. I thought they were gone forever. And I found them on my computer, backed up deep within the abyss of my computer. And I find myself rewatching. I mean, I just finished rewatching all of our movies, Gus, recently with a friend who had never seen any of them. And there's something special about making video with friends and just being able to be someone different for a little bit. You have that escapism of acting. And actually, Matt, I thought it was really interesting with one of your statements that you made in your GoFundMe video about how you're not normally cast as a hero. And I thought that was really interesting because that's something, you know, I've been in small shows in high school and things like that, but I was never cast as a hero. I was always cast as, you know, the best friend of the main character, like you said, or I was a side character or a villain. I was always a bigger role, but always never the hero. And that might have been because I was 5'6". I'm a short hero, but still, I just thought that was interesting when you said that.
It's the struggle is real. And also, there are so many people in TV and movies that are not tall who play the hero. So, like Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow, he's an inch taller than me. I'm 5'7", he is 5'8". So, it's not so much like always the size, but, that feeling of not getting to play the hero, we are kind of typecast as the funny guy. Another big reason why I wrote this, I'm like, you know what? No one's going to cast me as the hero, so I'm going to write myself as it, and screw you. So this is my chance to be this range of character I never get to be. So that's also part of the reason I wrote this.
I mean, Sylvester Stallone did a similar thing with Rocky to be one of, you know, he wrote himself for that role. He wanted to play that role, and he wouldn't back down from playing that role. And, you know, in my opinion, Rocky's one of the greatest movies of all time. So writing yourself in a role and betting on yourself is sometimes the best thing you can do.
Yeah, exactly.
And so here we are, getting towards the end of the show here. I just want to kind of quick fire random questions here. These are all off the cuff for you two gents, but nothing crazy. But I just have a question. What is...
both of you, what is your favorite sword in cinema?
Favorite sword.
See, I said, he asked me this here. He mentioned it. He brought it up as an example earlier. And I was like, if it was video games, it'd be so easy because it'd just be the Master Sword. But this makes it a lot harder because it's just cinema.
Movie sword.
So movie specifically?
Yeah.
Cinema. I apologize. Could be show. Yeah, cinema.
I'm going to go with Longclaw from Game of Thrones. Just the more I look at it, I'm like, this is cool. Fucking sword. Anduril from Lord of the Rings is cool, but it's just your like standard sword. It's something about Longclaw. Longclaw is made of a material that can kill White Walkers and can survive longer than normal swords. So I'm gonna go Longclaw.
Right on. I'm gonna go Peter Pan sword from Hook. I'm serious.
With the gold blade?
The gold blade and kind of like that coconut hilt or something.
Yeah, that one's cool. That one's pretty awesome, too.
I love that sword. I just rewatched Hook the other day, and I was like, I have to ask this question, favorite sword in cinema, because this one's mine. Ben.
It's also a great movie. So.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorites.
For me, I mean, if we were going like real legitimate sword, I would probably have to go with something like the Sword of Gryffindor from Harry Potter. Because I like a good old claymore. That's almost like it's, but that one is just a little nice looking sword. I've always liked the Sword of Gryffindor, especially Chamber of Secrets being my favorite Harry Potter movie. But if I'm being realistic and we're going to count it as a sword, Luke Skywalker's lightsaber would be my favorite. Yeah, it would be my favorite sword. So I would probably go Luke's lightsaber if I'm allowed to say that. I have a soft spot for Kylo Ren's too. So those are my two favorite lightsabers.
We'll accept it.
Yeah.
So this is a kind of an inside joke on the podcast, but if you, both of you, were to cast Jimmy Stewart, as a character in Stupid Mario Brothers, who would it be?
I just had this really funny thought. First of all, I love Jimmy Stewart. He's one of my favorite actors. Okay. And I actually showed my wife It's a Wonderful Life this Christmas for the first time. She had never seen it.
It's the first time I watched it this year, too. We did an episode, and it was the first time I watched it.
It's one of the, I always cry at the end because it's just amazing. It's touching. It's beautiful. The acting is great. I'm still kind of pissed he didn't win an Academy Award for it, but he got one before he passed away, so he's good. But I would absolutely love to see Jimmy Stewart play Captain Morgan.
That'd be good. That's funny. I see. I haven't rewatched season 5 yet, but I totally forgot about Captain Morgan. That's great.
That is my choice, Captain Morgan.
How about you, Ben?
I see. I just had this image, this fucking terrible image of Jimmy Stewart's face on Yoshi's body, and just him not really saying any words, but just being like Yoshi. Like that, I would watch the hell out of that. Jimmy Stewart playing something like a Waluigi, tall and lanky, and going wah all the time. I think that would be fun.
I can see that being really funny too. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I made the question up, but I don't know the answer. I know it would like fuck up the story of Stupid Mario Brothers, but I would, instead of the darkness taking the form of Mario, why not take the form of Jimmy Stewart? Yeah.
Jimmy Stewart plays everyone.
Yeah.
Just the miracles of technology. Bring him back from the dead and we're good to go.
That'd be good. So, both of you, what is your favorite movie of all time? This tells me a lot about who you are as a person, a little window into your soul. Favorite
movie? I will just say right now, I can't pick one. I have thought about this question so many times over the years. I can't pick a favorite movie. I like too many movies. I also like all kinds of movies. I like, you know, masterpiece, like brilliant, amazing movies that will stand the test of time. I like really stupid movies that are totally shitty movies that should not be ever have been made, but they're so funny. Like, you ever see Master of Disguise?
Yeah, we just quoted it today on our episode because we watched Batman Forever, and there's a scene where Nicole Kidman says, "And now rubber or whatever, black rubber," and I was like, "Ah, latex rubber."
See, that's a movie right there. Like, it's so stupid, but god damn it, it's funny.
Yeah.
So great. I love all sorts of movies. I love raunchy comedies. There's even a handful of chick flicks that I love. I love, you know, movies that will, like, you know, last forever. Like, one of my favorite black and white movies, that's also just an amazing, so well acted movie, is To Kill a Mockingbird. I absolutely love To Kill a Mockingbird, but I can't pick a favorite. I like too many movies in too many different genres. I also like there are movies that are just, you know, not well made, but I think of them as like popcorn movies where I'm like, oh, this is on? Hell yeah, I'll watch it. I like it. Like, there's a, I'm sure you've heard of The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Hell yeah.
Not a great movie, but I enjoy watching it because I think it's fun. I love the idea and the concept. It needs to be remade and done a lot better, but it's still, there are movies that I just enjoy watching because I think they're fun, like popcorn movies. So I can't pick a favorite movie, and I have tried. I can't do it.
Popcorn movies were kind of the inspiration of our show, where we take movies that we kind of like or maybe don't, and what if they were remade today? Like, if we did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, who would play Tom Sawyer? Who would play Sean Connery's character? And so on and so forth.
Yeah, it really makes you think, so.
Yeah, it does. How about you, Ben? Favorite movie?
I mean, it's always been Rocky. Rocky's always been my standard go-to. And the way I ultimately determined that I've always loved Rocky, and it is hard to choose a favorite movie, like you were saying, Matt, because it's like, I love Star Wars. So I say, if you say, what's your favorite movie series, I'll say Star Wars instead of Rocky. But favorite movie, standalone movie, would be Rocky. And the way I came to that determination was, there are movies that I watch every year, and a lot of people consider those, you know, those are your favorites. Like, I watch Jaws every year. I watch Jurassic Park every year. I watch all 9 Star Wars movies every year. But Rocky, I only watch every so often because it's special to me. I want to savor that watch. I don't want to overdo it. I watch it when I need it, when I want to watch it. So Rocky's always been there, and it's such a close second, or truly at such a close second, is Princess Mononoke. And that'll always be just as a huge special part and spot in my heart. So Princess Mononoke, probably my favorite. It is my favorite animated film of all time. But definitely Rocky, and falls in line as number one.
Have you ever checked out old Princess Mononoke there, Matthew?
Oh, of course I have. That's my favorite. I'm not an anime fan anymore. I used to be a huge anime fan back in middle school, but it's not my thing anymore. And I really think a lot of the stuff that's coming out today, I'm like, that looks generic and stupid and whatever. But Studio, I don't know if it's Studio Ghibli or Ghibli. I don't know how you say it. But
Ghibli, yeah.
Studio Ghibli. Every single film that has come out of that studio is incredible. And Mononoke was the first one I ever saw. So I have seen it many times. I still think it's passable because I watched it when I used to like anime, so that's why I still do like it. It's awesome. I love the story. The voice cast is great. I'm also not the kind of person who likes to listen to anime in Japanese because I'm like, okay, I want to watch this, not stare at the fucking subtitles. So I thought that the American cast of, you know, like, I think Billy Bob Thornton is great. Billy Crudup is a great actor, so the voice cast was great. Spirited Away is also great. That one hits you in the feelings a little bit more than Princess Mononoke does, but Spirited Away is great as well. So is Castle in the Sky.
And that leads to me. My favorite movie of all time is Castle in the Sky.
Seriously?
Yes, it is. It's the movie.
Holy crap.
It's the movie that, like, when I was young, and really inspired me to pursue storytelling and see movies as more than just movies, see it as art. And, yeah, that one, Castle in the Sky, kind of whisked me away when I was younger and kind of set me on my path. Even recently, I wrote an article that in a book that got published about favorite films in anime, and I got to write about Castle in the Sky. So yeah, Castle in the Sky is a big part of my life. And yeah, so very fortuitous that you mentioned it.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, wow, that's a small world.
And last question for all three of us. What's your favorite musical? We're all musical folks here. Favorite musical?
Easily, Les Mis. I've done Les Mis 3 times. I met my wife during a production of Les Mis. I like a lot of musicals. I'm a musical theater guy. Most of my career is musical theater, but it always comes back to that style. Also, I've read the book. I read the shortened book and the big ass like 1400 page version of Les Mis. It's still just a great story, and they really adapted it to a musical very well. A lot of things don't get made into musicals very well, but Les Mis was and is still awesome to this day.
Russell Crowe, good singer? Question mark.
No, but he's not known for being a singer, so the fact that he could match pitch even though it wasn't the best, I give him credit for that. I hate the movie. The movie of Les Mis pissed me the hell off, because as a man who's done it 3 times, I know also as an actor, the only reason they cast who they cast in the movie version was to bring people in, because if you had put musical theater people alone in this movie, people be like, who the hell is that guy? I don't know who he is. But if they're like, oh, Hugh Jackman, I know who he is. Let's go see Les Mis. That's why they did that. And that's why they also put Russell Crowe in there, because he's a box office draw. He's not going to, you know, he'll attract more attention than the guy who played it in the Broadway revival. So, so the movie sucks. So Russell Crowe, not the best singer, but if you're an actor who is not known for singing and you can match pitch, I'm impressed, because it's not what you're known for. Like, my wife hates the Sweeney Todd movie, Johnny Depp. I don't think it's that bad, because nobody in that cast is known for being a musical theater person, and Johnny Depp's acting was good. So I'm like, I like it. I give it a pass. So.
We love Les Mis, the movie.
It's funny though, because you said you met your wife at a Les Mis production during a Les Mis production. My wife and I, we dated in high school. We've been together for 8 years. And one of the first introductions to Gus, I think we were maybe a year in dating. Gus was at school, and she met Gus for the first time. Gus wanted to go see Les Miserables in theaters, and she didn't know what it was. I didn't know that she isn't the biggest musical fan. And I had been in musicals my whole life. I didn't know that she was a huge musical fan, and the movie was all singing, and she did not enjoy it. And is just now, we've been together for 8 years. I think that was a year into us dating. She is just now allowing me to pick movies again, because she's so nervous that I'll make the wrong choice. So it's just funny. We have differing wife stories there. No, I love the movie. I've seen the Broadway version, I believe. And then Gus, your theater put on Les Mis as well.
Yeah, they did. It was like their biggest show up until we did Mary Poppins.
Yeah. So
did that one too.
Indeed.
My favorite's Anything Goes.
Done that one too.
Yeah. Who were you in Anything Goes?
I was just in the ensemble. I was one of there's a quartet of sailors who sings the song called Lady Fair. I was there. But I wasn't supposed to be in that show. I was supposed to like take a break between the show I previously did and the one I was supposed to be doing. But I was like, hey, I want to be in this. I don't care if you're paying me $200 for the entire run. I want to be in it. Like, okay. So my wife was Reno back in high school.
Yeah, Reno Sweeney. Yeah. That's a show that was the last show I got to do in high school. So that one stuck with me. And it was funny because we did, Drowsy Chaperone just before, the year before. And I was the gangster in that. And then I got Moonface Martin in Anything Goes. And so I was typecast in both High School Musicals as a gangster. But playing Moonface was so much fun. And I love that show, just all the different characters that are in it. And actually, two of my good buddies were in the Sailor Quartet. So I always hung out. I really hung out with them backstage all the time. So it was always a lot of fun. I really like Anything Goes.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
So bringing it back to Kingsblade, and we're going to wrap up the show here. We wanted to raise awareness for Kingsblade, spread the word, because you have a budget that you're looking to fulfill, and you are accepting donations and certain ways to support. I'll give you a second, Matt, here to just discuss that, where they can find you.
You can find there's a GoFundMe link that we have going. You can find it literally all over. You just go to GoFundMe.com/ I think it's, I mean, there's a bunch of like numbers and symbols and stuff, but you just go to GoFundMe and type in either my name or Kingsblade. Type in both Kingsblade and my name, Matt Provencal. And you will find the page there. You can donate there. You can go to the Kingsblade Instagram page, which is Kings_Blade_Film. It was back when I made that, it was going to be a short film. Now it's a pilot. So it's Kings_Blade_Film, all lowercase. GoFundMe is in the link in that bio. It is all over my Facebook. It is all over my own personal Instagram, which is just Maddie the P. Anything really helps. I have had people give $800. I've had people give $10. If every person in my life that I knew gave $10, I would probably be halfway there. So it doesn't matter how much you give, but every little bit helps. But the GoFundMe link is everywhere, both Instagrams, Facebook. Other people in the cast have shared it on their personal pages as well. Chris has shared it. It's also all over the Discord, the Rich Alvarez Discord. I've posted in there like at least 100 times. So yeah, it's all over the place. And I know it's a hard time for a lot of people in the world right now, but if you are able to donate, I'm still very appreciative of it. Another thing, I keep coming back to the fact that I have $7,200 that I have made since I restarted this GoFundMe since March. So that much in that short amount of time is really not that bad, especially for a pandemic happening right now where a lot of people are financially struggling. So if anybody's able to give anything, that is wonderful. The links are everywhere on the internet. And if you are not able to give, maybe you reach out to people who can, or people who are fantasy fans, or maybe you want to have a little bit of a say in, you know, being a part of, you know, what could be the next big fantasy series. Because if you donate X amount, you're considered an executive producer on it, and your name would somehow be attached to a project that could go pretty far. So if you can't donate, spreading the word to people who can donate is also pretty great.
Yes, and I know it's just a little bit, but as you said, anything can help. On behalf of the Brothers Movie Factory, we just rounded you up to your next 100 there.
Oh, shit. Thank you, guys.
No problem. Thank you for being on the show, and thank you for being an artist and sharing your vision out there and really just trying to make something out of nothing. My brother, myself, and we just appreciate that out of people. And you're a good dude, and I've been a fan of yours for a while. So thank you once again for being a part of the Brothers Movie Factory podcast and talking Kingsblade.
Of course, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me. If down the line you wanted to do like a follow-up one, say if like once Kingsblade was shot and, you know, was in the editing process, I'm happy to come back if you guys be open to it. I'm cool, whatever.
Absolutely. We'll keep in touch for sure. And I'll also include links to your pages as well with this podcast, the GoFundMe in particular. And yeah, let's spread the word.
Yep, so we got almost $24,000 to raise. So, yeah. And I'd like to have this done and shot and edited and fully funded by the time pilot season rolls around in February, March. So that's a big goal we have. So we'll see if we can make it.
Yes, indeed. Ben, why don't you wrap us up here?
Alrighty, so that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. If you haven't already, that's our primary site. That's where we're posting the show to first, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, clips, and what we're going to be watching for that week. So check us out over there. You can also find us on Facebook.
Hey, you go to Facebook. If you type in The Brothers Movie Factory, that's us. Click on it, like it, share it. Follow along as I like to make memes about what we're watching each and every week, as well as links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago. Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and at.
So that is the show once more. Matt, again, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it and all your insight and ideas.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, right on. And until next week, brothers.
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 Been doing it for 2 years.
Yep.